I was starting to wake up and I could feel him there when I felt someone else next to me. And it was somebody that felt, I just knew she loved me. I just felt this protection and love. It was as if my mother was standing there almost, only more so. And she leaned down and she whispered, "Don't open your eyes." I figured it was my guardian angel. And I'm going to do whatever my guardian angel says because I knew the difference between that dark and this light. And she said to me, "Lift out, lift up, and come with me."
T.I., welcome to Passion Harvest. I'm so excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
I've had a look at a few of your interviews as well. It's fascinating. For the audience, would you mind just sharing a little bit of briefly your background and I guess well, I'm briefly your background of growing up in a Victorian home and some of the incredible experiences that propelled you on this life journey.
That's right. So when I was 3 months old, my family, I was third child of 10 and in 13 years. So there were a lot of children all the time. And we moved into my father's ancestral home, which belonged to his grandmother when she was moved into a rest home, I guess is what they called it at the time. And it had been in my family since the 1890s. So I was the fourth generation at that home. And prior to my family buying it, my great great grandmother bought it for my great grandmother as a wedding present from the original builders who built it shortly after the Great Chicago Fire. And it was the first home built in the area called Portage Park. And it was just alive with spirit. We were all the time. It wasn't like something happened and then a month later something else happened. It was every single day we were experiencing encounters. So one of my earliest memories was when I was still like sitting on a toddler on the floor. I was an early language acquirer, so I could speak early. And they say there's a correlation between memory and when you have language. But I remember sitting and playing with the cars, and I heard my name called in my ear. And I turned to look, and I felt this energetic something nearby. And I turned to look to see who it was. You know how you can feel when somebody's near? That's what it felt like. Someone was near. And no one was there, and my sister and brother were playing with their things. So I just continued to play, and then it came even closer, and the pitch of the voice dropped. So it went from T-I to T-I. And I looked again, startled, and I was like, huh, wonder what that was. And then would feel that presence all the time. So this is a time when, as a toddler, I'm figuring out the world. I am learning what things are. I am naming things. I am recognizing this flower, this person, this thing. And I was also interacting with or being interacted with at first, these other things that were unseen at first. And then they became visible. And there were several that would manifest in like full body or partial body apparitions. My siblings and I all shared a big room upstairs. It was the master bedroom originally. And my parents took a smaller room because anyway, we had all our beds and we shared beds lined up in this one room. And the way the house was is there was a hallway that went from a bathroom with a door to the room and in the hall, down the hallway. And then there was a stairwell that had 18 stairs that went down. And below that was a hallway on the first floor that ended at another room. And the basement door was there on the left. And we would see this person, this lady, who would walk every single night back and forth, so predictable that we could count knowing when she would appear and reappear. And we called her the Slinky Lady because as she walked, we could see it was like there was light from somewhere behind her, but we saw this like white profile outline. And she would just look forward. She never turned and looked at us. Other things there looked at us, but she was always looking straight ahead. And she had this long gown and long dark hair. And she would take a step, and when she would step, her body would catch up slowly. So it was like tracer lights, like the light spread out and then caught up to her like this. And so back in the middle of the last century in the US, we had this toy called a slinky, which was a spring that you would do this. And they made a slinky dog that you could pull on a string. It had the slinky in between. It had the front part of a dog and the back part of a dog. You'd pull it and it would stretch out and come together. So we named her the Slinky Lady. And we would just watch the Slinky Lady go back and forth. And we tried, we never wanted to run into her. We didn't know what would happen for the longest time, but we just didn't want to, we didn't want to run the risk of doing that. We, all of us. So if one of us woke up in the middle of the night and needed to use the restroom, we had a pact that we wouldn't leave each other alone at night or day or anything. And so we'd wake up the other and ask them to watch for us. And we wait till we see the Slinky Lady walk into the bathroom. And then you could count 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, up to about 15. And then she'd come back the other way. And then you knew you had about 65 until she came back. So you'd be like, go, and run into the bathroom, do your business, jump back in bed just as 64, 1,000, 65, and she would appear again in the doorway every single night. And day, we would sometimes see her, but more in the day. In the nighttime, you could look directly at her and see her. In the daytime, you'd see her move out of the corner of your eye in your peripheral vision. So she just did this. She just like clockwork, just continuously. One time, we also had if the deal that we would never leave each other alone was my sister and I moved to our own bedroom when we got a little older. So now I'm about 5 years old, and my older sister Kate and I shared a bed in a small room at the top of the stairs that shared a closet with the great room, with the master bedroom, which was very odd. The door on each side opened to the same closet. You could go through, but we would never do that because we avoided that closet like the plague. We just did not want to go near that closet. It just was creepy, so much so that on Sunday evenings after my mother did laundry, we would have to take our laundry upstairs. And this was a time when all the dresses needed to be ironed. And so my mother worked like a dog her whole life, you can imagine. And so we would take our laundry up and have to put it in the closet, hang the dresses up. And so we would always do rock, paper, scissors, or eeny, meeny, miny, moe, or some way to determine who of my sister and I, putting the clothes away together, who was going to stand outside of the closet, put their body in front of the door so it couldn't close, and who would have to step into the closet to first grab the hangers and then close the closet real quick, put the dresses on the hangers, and then open it again and go in to hang them up. And then we would quickly slam that door shut and run like crazy. My sister was older than me. I never quite figured out that she always got to hold the door open, and I was always the victim who had to go into the closet. And we never played in our rooms. We never spent any time anywhere except in the main room altogether in piles. Because if you were alone anywhere, things would touch you and come into your space in very unfriendly ways. So this one time I went to bring the laundry up, and I didn't see my sister Kate. And I had the dresses, and my mom said she took the stuff for the dresser up already. So I said, okay, and I hightailed it upstairs because I figured she'd be right at the top of the stairs. And I got there, and she wasn't in the room. And not only that, but nobody else was upstairs. And all of a sudden, my heart starts pounding. I'm like, oh, I need to get out of here. And I just set the dresses on the bed as carefully as I could and headed down the stairs to go get my sister to come put the dresses away with me. Halfway down the stairs, now I was in such a panic to leave the room that I didn't wait to see where the Slinky Lady was. And so I just ran out. And I got halfway down those stairs. At the bottom of the stairs, there was a huge china cabinet. And I was holding onto the railing, and I saw my sister Kate. And so I said, Kate, come help me put the dresses up. And I was still holding the railing because my father would holler at us, hold the railing and walk. It was this steep, long staircase with a long railing. And I was holding onto the railing. I said, she said, I already put those away. And I'm like, please don't make me go into the closet by myself. She says, okay. And she starts to come. So I let go of the railing. And as I go to turn around to go back up the stairs, I felt this force as if something came right through me so strongly that it literally pushed me off the stair. And I just went, phoom. And I landed like three stairs from the bottom, tumbled into that china cabinet that fell on me. There was glass everywhere. And I'm this little girl, I was probably 6 or 7. And this thing is on top of me. And I say, Mommy, Mommy, Davey pushed me, my older brother, because he was the only one that could move that fast. He just like bam into me and down I went. Well, meanwhile, Kate is standing in the hallway just screaming at the top of her lungs. And my mom and dad came running and my dad picked the thing up. We picked glass out of my hair and everything. And I later said that, that Davey pushed me in, and my mom says, No, you just fell down the stairs. You just must have stumbled. And my sister Kate said, oh no, she did not fall down the stairs. She flew off those stairs. She wouldn't jump and leap into the air to go down those stairs. Something pushed her down those stairs. And my mom says, well, it's okay. Nobody's hurt, so it's okay. My poor mom was just trying to keep us from being freaked out all the time when she herself was experiencing many things as well. So I found out why we didn't want to run into the Slinky Lady, because I'm guessing that she was on her way down the stairs, and I was just in the way, and her energy just went and knocked right through me.
What
Yeah.
a scary experience growing up as a child.
It was scary growing up, but it wasn't, it was also normal. I did not know that these things didn't happen everywhere until I like spent the night at my grandmother's house, and it was so quiet. And then I thought that everybody ex would experience it, and if those things were there, and I didn't have a name for it, I didn't was wasn't able to call it ghosts until later on, until we were a little bit older. And my grandmother, my father's mother, lived next door in a cottage next door to the house, and she told my mother that one of the spirits there was my great grandfather, who had passed away in the room up there. And we saw him from time to time. We saw other spirits and had other things. There was also something dark that was like this bundle of black darkness. And I'm not sure if that was an entity or if it was just an energy from the terrible things happened in that home before my family bought it. I wrote a book about it, that my first book is called Beyond Brick and Bone, and it tells all the stories of our encounters, of my personal encounters. And then the second half of the book is the ghost's story. So they started coming to me as I was writing the first book, and I was afraid of them. And I'm not afraid of ghosts. I deal with ghosts all the time, and it's just part of nature. That's how I It's just part of who we are, and it doesn't scare me, but these scared me. And I realized that it was because I was traumatized as a child. And also I was afraid to hear their story because it was part of my story as well as a child. But I let them in, and as a spirit medium, I can communicate with the dead. And so I let them tell their story, and the second half of the book is their story, and it turned out not so scary, but so tragic. People don't stick around in places and try to get your attention for no reason at all. And a lot of times what seems terrifying is trauma. And if we can just have compassion for those spirits and those souls who are still suffering in that. And so then by telling their story, I've no longer been visited by them. I received some gratitude, and then they moved on, which was really quite
That's beautiful.
cathartic.
So, I mean, there's so many different terms. Would one call them earthbound spirits or people that have died that haven't transition to the afterlife?
There are some earthbound, but how I describe earthbound is someone who does not realize that they have an option. That so they stick with what's familiar. And what I've experienced from different people who I consider earthbound, they either aren't aware that they have died. And this happens very often with people who die suddenly, or it's almost, or from like if they were intoxicated or on drugs or something when they die, they're not sure. They think they're still tripping. I've had that a couple of times, which is crazy. And then you just tell them, then I just let them know, and they're like, oh, wow, okay. So that's earthbound. Others that are earthbound are some who are choose to not go forward because their thoughts about the afterlife, they're afraid of judgment. So we're, so often in so many religions, we're raised in so much shame. And in that shame is comes the guilt and then fear of judgment and afraid that you're going to go to hell or you're going to suffer in your afterlife. And what I've found is hell, what my experience is that hell does exist, but it's our own creation. So these spirits in my childhood home were in hell because they were trapped in that guilt and shame and trauma, and they needed to be released by the Slinky Lady. She was the anchor there. And once her story was told and she was no longer just completely erased, then everything was like, okay, I'm ready. And it just
So
kind of
that's beautiful. So once you shared their stories, they were able to remove their fear and release from the house.
She just did not want to be having never existed. It was she, her life had been erased. She'd been disappeared, and she just wanted to know that she lived a life and she was a valuable soul and had made an impact. And I am very grateful to her, and I'm very grateful to the other spirits. Whether or not they were terrifying or startling or uncomfortable, because as I grew, just like you learn to recognize flora or fauna, I could recognize spirit, and I never lost that. And so I've been able to continue to exercise that muscle or that part of my brain where I can perceive spirit, and it's brought me just wonderful experiences and stories and being able to. I'm the type of person that likes to help people, and that to have something that can help people who aren't carbon-based anymore, to I feel like I've been given a gift by spirit, and now I can help spirit with that gift.
And there's so much in the unseen. I know you're a guardian of the unseen world, and I'd like to explore that further, but there's so much in the unseen that's there that we don't consciously know or are not consciously aware of.
That's true. If we paid attention to everything happening in the room we are in right now, it would be more than we could fathom. When you just think about just little particles of dust flying around, we don't perceive, we ignore that. We ignore the just the background sounds in order to exist. And that's where people who have ADHD or sometimes people on the autism spectrum who can't filter out stimuli like that, it's very disconcerting and causes a lot of anxiety. What I've learned is for myself, I can stop and filter in what I want. I can live my day-to-day life not paying attention to every dust speck going by, but I can stop and find one. And so if the opportunity is necessary, I'm using the expression dust speck because it's something that's pretty invisible and yet it exists for real. And I believe that people, the beings sentient beings in the spirit world and all different, you know, we talk about this side and the other side. I put, make that plural. It's the other sides, because there is not just one other side other than our physical lifetime. But I've been able to tune into that, those different places, and pay attention and focus on those parts.
What do you mean by the other sides, as in plural?
Well, there were spirits in my house growing up that were not aware of each other. So they were occupying the same space.
Wow.
And they were simultaneously interacting with us, but they were not aware of each other. So, and in when this was something that Kara, who is the woman in the house, the slinky lady, showed me, that right when she died, there was another death, and that person who died was in spirit right by her, but couldn't see her. So everybody's in their own place for a while, but there are also things. So this is like the dead and the newly dead, or the long dead too, that can occupy different layers of space. But it's not really space. It's different layers of reality. That's better, because there's no space involved. But then there are other things that are on different vibrations, things like forest spirits, things like grief eaters and burial grounds, guardian spirits, nature spirits. I'm not sure what else. These are all the different things that I have encountered. Beings that never were human and exist and are sentient and can interact with us if we can focus on that. It sounds so cliche to talk about vibration, but it really is. It's getting your mind in a different wavelength. It's like they talk about, you know, don't let your kids watch television before going to school, because it gets their alpha waves and they zone out. So, and just before we go to sleep, our brain waves change. And so I imagine that it's my brain waves changing to connect to these different things on their own different wavelengths that exist all around us all the time.
It's so interesting. I have to ask, you had an experience with your guardian angel. Do you mind sharing that with the audience?
Oh, yes. I have more than one guardian angel.
Oh, please go ahead. This is your show.
I think the one you're referring to was when I was little, in the room with my sister in our haunted house. And my sister Kate and I would get in bed and we would tuck everything in so that only like your breathing, you know, was outside of covers. Even on hot days, we'd pull sheets up and we would scoot to the middle of the bed and stick back to back and face outwards and tuck everything in. If your hand was out or anything was out, it would be touched or, you know, pulled. So we would just tuck everything in, and we didn't want to fall asleep and leave the other one awake or be the one that's awake. So she and I would just chant softly in a whisper. We would just say, sleep, sleep, until we simultaneously fell asleep. And then we would wake up in the daylight. Well, one night I woke up and it was still dark. And our room, it was a small room. And to my left, there was a low window, large window. And then our bed was up in the eaves. So there were two small windows above the bed. And I lived in the city. This was in Chicago. And so there was a street light out front. And I woke up. And I was on my back, and this made me nervous because I was no longer tucked in and protected. And I felt, so I opened my eyes, and the first thing I did was listen to see if I could hear my parents. They would be awake downstairs and have a television on, or they would be talking in their bedroom, and I listened and I could hear nothing. And so I listened outside, and I couldn't even hear cars on the busy street on the other side of the alley. So I knew it was very late, and I was wide awake, and I reached over to try to grab my sister's hand to squeeze it to wake her up, because I had learned the best defense to not be interacted with when you're alone is to try to be invisible and not let them know that you know they're there. So I felt something coming in, and it was coming from the foot of the bed. And at the foot of the bed was the closet door. And I just felt this heaviness coming toward me, and I recognized it. I knew what was coming. And it was this darkness that was in that closet. And so I just laid very still, and I just moved my eyes, and I closed my eyes. So I was looking through my eyelashes, and I was looking around the room, and I was trying to do these relaxation thing to try to get myself to go to sleep. And I'm feeling my heart pounding so hard that I'm thinking whatever is there is going to know I'm awake, because my heart is pounding. I could hear it. They must be able to hear it. And I looked, and I averted the closet until I heard the click of the doorknob. It was a brass, ornate carved brass doorknob on the closet. And the light caught it, and I saw it starting to turn. And I was like, oh, don't look at that. Your eyes are playing tricks on you. Click. And then I looked away and looked away. And as I couldn't, out of the corner of my eye, laying as still as I possibly could, the door opened probably about 2.5 feet. And I was like, oh no, oh no. And then I looked in the closet. I was just compelled. And there was a man in there, and he was looking right at me, but also through me. So he was not, I wasn't sure if he really saw me, but he sensed me. I'm not sure how, but he was looking right at my eyes, and he was wringing his hands like this. And he had this sad expression. He was, as soon as I caught his eyes, he slid a little forward. So he was at the edge of the doorway, and I pulled back because I didn't want him to keep coming into the room. But he stopped in the doorway, and I noticed that from about knees down, he disappeared. On the top, he was wearing a nightshirt. I didn't recognize a nightshirt at the time. It just, and he had long sideburns that men at that time didn't wear. And he caught my eye, and I had this rush of unbelievable grief, just horrific, hopeless, agonizing grief. And I wasn't afraid anymore. All I could fear, all I could feel was his sorrow and his just hopelessness. And I tears started falling out of my eyes, and I couldn't move, and I just felt so much compassion for him, and I felt what he felt. So I suppose it was more empathy. I could feel what he was feeling, and I did not like it. But somehow, I know it's crazy, I fell back asleep. And everybody who experiences a ghost watching them and falls asleep, I totally get it. I know babies, when they're overstimulated, will fall asleep, and that may be just a mechanism, a safety mechanism. And when I woke up in the morning, I was back on my side. Kate was still sleeping, and I was like, oh, phew, that was a terrible dream, because now I'm on my side again. And I turn and sit up, and that closet door was open. And just then, Kate is stretching to wake up, and she says, why did you open the closet door? And I said, I didn't open the door. I didn't open it. And she said, well, what happened after that is I had made this connection with this gentleman, with this ghost. And frequently, it wasn't every night, but I could never tell when it would happen. I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I hated it. I wasn't afraid, but I didn't want to feel his sadness, and I didn't want him to step into the room. I didn't want it to expand anymore. I wanted that to stop, and I did not know how. So one night, I woke up. And I was starting to wake up, and I could feel him there. And I was still laying on my side, because I found out I didn't even have to be looking at him to get his to feel what he was feeling. And I didn't open my eyes yet. I was just starting to wake up when I felt someone else next to me, and it was somebody that felt, I just knew she loved me. I just felt this protection and love. It was as if my mother was standing there almost, only more so. And she leaned down and she whispered, "Don't open eyes." And now we every night would kneel down and pray, you know, angel of God, my guardian dear. So I figured it was my guardian angel. And I'm going to do whatever my guardian angel says, because I knew the difference between that dark and this light. And she said to me, lift up, and come with me." Something to that effect. And I have no idea how I knew what she meant, but I kind of started to, it didn't mean like get up out of bed. I was moving into the space where she was. And she was like pulling me into that space. And so my astral body, I know now, but I called it my spirit body, lifted out and went with her. And I just joined with her energy and went out in front of the house. And it was the most amazing thing. It was nighttime, but I could see everything clearly without any shadows. Everything is like amber lit, so clear, like every leaf, everything was like glowing energetically. And she kind of communicated to me in ways, but I remember hearing her voice, and she had this very calm, loving voice. And she said, "You can fly." And I said, "I can." And so I took a few steps and I leapt into the air and I started flying, and I flew up to the top of the house and I played and bounced off. You know, I pretended I was a ball and bounced off the house. And I went up in the top of the trees. I was out of the house and I was light and I wasn't cold. I couldn't feel the wet dew. I was just in this amazing place, absolutely safe and out of reach of the man in the closet. And then pretty soon I was just playing and I wasn't aware of my angel still being there. And all of a sudden the sky starts getting light and I realize that morning is coming, and that if I am outside when my mother wakes up, I will be in big trouble. But I have no idea how to go back. And all of a sudden she's there with me. And she said, "It's okay, just fall back in." And again, I knew just what she meant. And I was like, and I went this like, I felt this like whoosh, like falling from a great height. And the next thing I knew, I startled myself awake. And I was like, oh, I was so rested. My body was fully rested. My mind was rested. I felt so great. When Kay woke up, I she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I was outside flying last night." She says, "Oh, you big liar." So I stopped telling her. When I told my mother, she said, "I love flying dreams." And I'm like, "It wasn't a dream. I really left, you know." Anyway, so then I knew how to do that. And on subsequent nights, when I would wake up in the night, when the man would wake me up to feel his pain, I would not interact with him. And instead, I would lift up and lift out and go outside. And so my guardian angel taught me how to astral travel. And so I would stay in the yard, and then pretty soon I got bolder and I'd go down the block, and then I'd go to the playground, and then I could go to Lake Michigan, and I could go anywhere I wanted in an instant just by lifting out of my body. And I could do it so easily as a little girl. It's a little more arduous now, but I still can travel like that. And I've told people my whole life that I could leave my body and travel in my spirit. I even connected as a teenager. I got really sick, that I never fully recovered from. I've been disabled my whole life. And when I was in a wheelchair and my friends were going to a friend's basement and I was couldn't go along, they said, "Oh, no, we won't go then, we won't go." And I said, "Well, go ahead and I'll just join you a different way." And so I stayed in the backyard and I left my body. And I had been to Ted's basement when I wasn't in the wheelchair, so I was able to visualize and get myself there. I saw what they were doing. I saw, listened to the music they were playing. I watched them. I listened to the conversation. And later I told them this. And some of my friends were very curious and wanted to know more, and some were really creeped out. And others were like, well, that's not great. You know, it's just a good guess. You know, that's what we always do down there. Except they were doing something that we never did. They were making a chain out of those can pop tops when they came off the can. And we'd never done that before. So anyway, and I had told people about when people had asked me, how did you learn how to do this? I would always say my guardian angel taught me. And so my husband, I would tell him the story about how my guardian angel just, came and took me out. And it was once I knew what it was like, it was fine. It's like riding a bicycle. Once you know how to ride a bicycle, you can ride a bicycle. So then in my 40th year, I had been misdiagnosed as a teenager with something that was supposed to kill me, that I would not survive into my 30s. I would get more and more disabled. And then until I had a life, expectancy of about 30, 35. Well, I fooled them because I found out at my 38th year that what I had was a misdiagnosis and I was able to be treated. And although the disability is still there, it's not progressing. And now I'm an old person and I'm still here. But my 40th year was after I had been treated and had this new lease on life, this new mobility, this awakening in my body and in my spirit. My children were older, they didn't need me as much as a mommy. And so I had this amazing time of spiritual awakening. This is when I really connected to forest spirits and other ethereal entities and beings. I was just waking up again after having been, kind of suppressed for a while. But I was always able to leave my body. So one night I dreamed an entire day of my childhood when I was about 5 years old, 5, 6 years old. Saw myself get up. I saw everything going on, but it was like a movie. I just watched myself. It wasn't being myself. I could see the spaghetti on my shirt. I could, everything was so vivid. And I woke up from that dream just feeling so good and seeing my family. And I started thinking about that house. And I wondered if those spirits were still there. And I was in a place where I was interacting willfully with spirit. And so I thought, huh, I wonder if I could go there and see if they're still haunting the place. And if they are, maybe we could have a conversation or something. And I was so instead of just going back to sleep, I laid down and I did my meditation to leave my body and I astral traveled to my old house. And I was standing right in front of it at that same spot where I was as a little girl, that first time I traveled. And I looked up at the house and it looked exactly the same siding, the same everything. And it was all dark inside. And then I noticed that the car in the driveway was the station wagon that we had as a child. It was my old car. And I looked up the street, and the other cars on the street were from 1960. And I thought, I knew I wasn't dreaming. Because a dream feels different than it, the color, the light is different. As I said, it's an amber light. I knew I was on the astral plane, but I was not in the present. I somehow was in the past. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I'm going inside. So I went inside just gleefully enjoying, the toys scattered on the floor. I noticed the hole in the couch. I noticed every little detail. I was able to see my parents spooning in their bed, and they were so young. And I went to, and I didn't like walk. It's odd. It's like you just kind of you move like a ghost moves. You don't have to climb the stairs. You just kind of go to the next space that you will yourself to. And so I was next to my bed, and I saw my little self sleeping, and I saw my sister sleeping, and all of a sudden I see my little self start to move and groan a little bit, and I feel the man in the closet start coming, start manifesting just beyond that closet door. And I thought to myself, oh no, you don't. You're not gonna, not this time, not this time. Not, gotta go through me first. And so I just leaned down and I whispered, don't open your lift up, lift out, and come with me. And I pulled her little spirit into my grown-up spirit, the same one, we were the same. And we went outside, and then I just stepped back and let my little, it was like, it was, we were the same, but I had been more by my lived life. So it was
Wow,
me the whole
goosebumps,
time.
goosebumps. That was just unbelievable.
I know, and it's so bizarre. It's and I've tried. I have to say that when I that morning when I told my husband, he was like, you know, he's like, you are spookier than I even thought. But I've tried to do that again, and to maybe go other places and go in the past or something, and I have never been able to. And so I'm pretty sure that my other guardian angel helped me get there to help me. And that's what I think my guides and my angels helped get me to that place to help me on my path, to get me on my path. Because as a little girl, I needed to feel the connection with whoever woke me up, or I would not have gone with anyone. I would never have gone with a stranger. And I think it's because I knew she loved me, and I just, you know, I think it's because it was me that I was able to learn.
And then I guess the question is, past, present, future, is it all happening now?
I have no idea. It's so bizarre. Not in this world, not in this physical world, but it is all happening now when you remove the matter, you know, when you are just on the energetic level. It is all happening now. Except I've tried to go in the past, and I can't, and I have tried to go in the future even, and you know, I don't know if anybody can ever do that willfully. I think there you have to have a special key.
But
And
in
somebody
some
can
way
dig in.
you went, your future self connected with your past self
It
and
did.
offered it the most incredible guidance.
Yes. And it was beyond, I was already at an age beyond what my original lifespan was supposed to be. So I had outlived my expiration date already.
Well, maybe
And
it was
I,
always meant to be. Who knows?
maybe it was always meant to be. Of course it was, because, you know, we make the most of what happens to us, and not, it, you know, it isn't all fate. Things happen that aren't planned. What we can do is react to them in a way so that we make meaning out of what happens to us.
Have you been physically back to the house that you grew up in?
Yes, I have.
How was
And
that?
oh my goodness. So I went with a couple of friends. We were visiting in Chicago. I live in Michigan now. And I was telling the stories, and we just drove by to look at the house. And so I parked on the street so I could point out places and tell some of the stories and point things out, you know, the childhood tour kind of thing. And one of my friends said, "Why don't you go up and knock on the door and see if we can go inside?" And I said, "Oh no, I don't want to go inside." And I said, "What am I, you know, what am I going to do? Walk up there and say, hi, you know, can we come in?" And she said, "Yeah, go up and say you lived there before. It's not that unusual. People do that." And I'm like, "No, I don't want to do that." And, but I'm easy when it comes to my friends. And so we did. And we knocked on the door, and I said, "Hello, I'm T.I. Shippers." And this nice young 30-something fella answered, and he says, "T.I. Shippers, are you one of the shippers who lived here?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh, I have so many questions. Can you come in? Come on in. Come on." And so he gave us a tour of the house. They had remodeled the whole place. It was beautiful. I did not feel, my uncle, when we moved out, my uncle moved in with his family, and we visited a lot from time to time shortly after we moved out over the next several years. And every time I went in, it was like this on me, this, you know, like, you know, it was so oppressive. But this time I walked in and I didn't get that at all. It was light and airy and open. and gave us this whole tour. And so we went, wait till you see upstairs. And I put my hand on the railing, and all of a sudden, it just all went right through me. And I said, this is the same railing. I said, wow, you have such a great memory, the guy whose house it was. And I said, yeah, only it wasn't me who had the memory. It was the house who remembered me. And when I touched it and connected to it, it was like, there you are. And all of a sudden, I was energetically connected to it again. And the upstairs, the stairs were okay. The upstairs was okay. And then he took us into the basement, which was always the most terrifying place. That's where the slinky lady would end up and turn around and come back. That hadn't been changed at all, no remodeling. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that some of my fingerprints from 1968 are still on the back of that door in the basement. It looked exactly the same, and it had the same, the same heaviness. I told him, he was saying how they were going to raise up the foundation and make a rec room down there. And the neighbors all call the place the haunted house. Everybody in the neighborhood refers to it as the haunted house. And he said they had a lot of things happen when they first moved in, but
And that
it's
didn't
calmed
bother
down a
them.
lot. Well, it was a different time. The lights would go on and off, and that happened with us. There'd be bumps. They'd walk through cold spots, all the typical haunted house things. But no, it didn't so much. And he said after they finished remodeling, it all just settled down.
What's your advice for people if they feel they have energy? We'll call them energies, energies in their home.
Well, there's a lot you can do. I help a lot of people who deal with this. And when somebody is like, for example, what you do is you have to change the energy. In the moment, you have to change that energy some way. And for example, I helped a woman who was waking up in the middle of the night and seeing this black entity raise up at the foot of her bed. And she was terrified. Well, you can imagine. She lived alone in an apartment in Chicago. And it was like this looming thing that her dog would freak out. And she was just, and I couldn't get there right away. So it was going to be weeks before I could get there. So I told her to laugh. Laughter is the quickest, most accessible way to break up that energy in the room if you don't want to interact with it. Crystals have different energies. Candles placed in certain places, do things, plants change the energy. There's all different ways to just reset energy to bust that up a little bit. Things don't just stick around to torment. Some things like to torment us. That is true. There are some things that find it very entertaining to terrify us in the middle of the night. But you can also put up, just like having a roommate, you could set up boundaries. You could set up boundaries with the unseen as much as the seen, right? And so there are ways to do that.
It's interesting, and I haven't talked about this on the show before. When I was in my young teenage years, I lived in a very old terrace house, and every night I told my mother, and she said, "Don't be silly." I would hear something walking up the stairs. The stairs, it was old, and the stairs creaked, and I would I never saw it, but I could feel it, and I like clockwork, I'd hear it all the time, and I ended up just I always covered my ear with blankets. I still do that today out of habit. Not that I'm scared and I've moved on, but it's just a habit that I've gotten into the habit of.
It's
And then I'd
comforting.
block my ear so I just wouldn't hear it. It was annoying. I wasn't afraid, but I'd hear it creaking on the stairs every night and walking
And
across the landing.
you had somebody like the Slinky Lady walking around.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you just, for something like that's not bothering you in any way. It's just you wake up with the sound of it and cover your ear and go back to sleep. And I don't There's nothing to be done for that. I mean, why, unless somebody is in distress, unless a spirit is distressed, if they're just taking a path that's comforting to them, well, have at it. We're all working things out throughout our life and maybe afterlife, who
And
knows?
as you talked about different levels or realms, or we can call them vibrations or dimensions, no one else in the house heard it except me.
Yep,
Night after night.
that's so you were probably as just as you're going to sleep, you probably somehow just got on that wavelength and paid attention to it. I'll bet you others started to hear it and just slipped out of that wavelength, quickly went to sleep or just woke up more up. But you paid attention to it. And so that's why you kept hearing it.
It's
That's my
interesting.
guess.
It's interesting. I mean, I don't want to see a ghost just personally, not with my physical eyes. I've seen them, but in my mind's eye, I mean, I've experienced not like what you've experienced, but some things. You mentioned that you have a technique to astral travel. Would you mind sharing that with the audience?
Sure. Well, it takes practice.
Okay. Everyone
And
wants
so,
something right now, but me too,
okay,
but I
you
know.
start, so start by getting aware of your astral self, your energetic self. And this is, there's a real simple way to start that. And it's you rub your hands together, friction, so that they kind of warm up. Pay attention to the palms of your hands. Focus on just the how the palms of your hands feel. And then pull them apart, close your eyes, and pull as far as you can still feel it, and then come closer, pull away, and pull away. So what you're doing is you're playing with your energy just outside your body. And when you become aware of that, when you get good at the hand thing, then you do the same thing and you do it from here, from your face, and you pull. So you're expanding your energy, your aura, so to speak, away from your body. And then the next step would be to lie very still and feel. First of all, you go through this, like you do the whole physical body scan thing and feel your heels on on whatever you're lying on and or sitting in the chair, you feel where you are connected. And then focus on feeling beyond that. Feeling your energetic self inside your body. And if you've been doing this and know what that energy feels like, you can feel your energy. I feel it most strongly in like my solar plexus right here. And then as you focus on that, you focus on instead of pulling it out with your hands, just pushing it out and pushing it out. And then feel it just get right off your skin, and then you'll come back. And you keep doing this. And what happens is when you start to do that, I'm also at the same time, my eyes are closed and I'm focusing right on this point in my forehead between my eyebrows. And when I do that, and look there, it first starts dark and there's like light on the sides. But pretty soon I see a pinpoint in the center of my focal point in the distance. And I pay attention to that. And for me, I've heard different people describe it. It usually starts white and then turns more indigo colored and starts to swirl. And very often, especially early on, really scary faces and things will appear in the side. And for most people, they feel like, oh, it's demons, we'll go back in and immediately startling your back. Well, I'm not sure what those are, if they're guardians or what, but I just keep going past them. I first know, I know for a fact that I am strongest. My spirit and body are the strongest connection, stronger than something that's just in spirit. And so as I move through this world, I am not disconnected from my physical self. I'm just outside of it, but I'm always still connected to it. And so I don't fear these things. And that gets me past that place until all of a sudden I'm like, whoosh, out there. And then for the longest time, I would always move through. Does that make sense, what I just said? Does it?
Yes, it does. I'm going to practice that technique.
Okay, see if that works. And get back with me and I'll because it's different for everybody. What you see will be different, because we are all surrounded by different beings that are part of our spirit team. There's things that look really scary that are part of our spirit team. We all are made of both darkness and light. And some of that darkness we are witnessing as we're expanding. And don't be afraid of it. You look at it, go, wow, that's dark. And then go. And I used to move through space where my astral body was stuck the same way that my physical body is. So it looked like two me's. One was a spirit me walking through space or flying through space, and the other was a physical me. And then I realized that my energy does not need to be contained in the shape of my physical form. And once I did that, all of a sudden, I no longer had to like turn my head to see what was over there. I could experience 360 everything at once and be like at a forest where you are the forest. You're one with the forest spirit, where I'm not standing in the forest. I experience what everything in that forest is experiencing, the wholeness and the connectedness from roots up through little flying things, and just be all of that. So I just let my energetic self become part of what other energetic things are, which is that's like a later phase of mine that I've been able to do. That it's amazing. It's just,
Life is,
it's
you're
so.
amazing. Life's amazing. I understand the concept of being part of, as you were describing it, not like you've experienced, but just being part of everything. Because we are, I guess, in essence, we are. We forget in our physical vehicle.
We do forget. And I think that, when people talk about like the sacred or a deity or whatever, I think that's the collective oneness, the whole, where all our energies connect together and there's no separation. From the moment we start to form inside our mother's body, and then we come into the earth and the cord is cut and we are a separate being. We spend our entire lives seeking connection and trying to not but finding those who we connect with, who we can understand, who we love, for trying to find that until, and I think what can happen is when we shed our bodies, we no longer are separate. We're once again part of that whole. And there are those, when you talked earlier about earthbound spirits, though they're people who are still experiencing the spirit world in the form of their physical body. So they're still kind of not releasing into oneness. And so like I hear, the go towards the light, where people say go towards the light. It isn't go towards the light. It's become the light. It's not a place we go, it's a state of being. And so, as I have discovered that my energetic body d does not have to remain as my physical body is formed, I can communicate with spirit, with the dead who are still manifesting in their physical form, only just spirit, and in a way explain how to become one with everything. How to not become one. That sounds ridiculous, but it is. It's exactly what it is. How to let go of all the little things that we happen in our life that keep our molecules together, that keep our atoms all stuck together,
To be
and
free.
to be free. To be free and peace. We talk about rest and peace. That's exactly it. To find peace, to become peace.
I love how you explain that, and I think what we have to understand is it's not, I often say it's not some far off universe, it's here.
It's here. It's here and it's everywhere. And it's marvelous, marvelous, wonderful. I think, I've heard people, many people who with near-death experiences, and they go to a place and they're in their physical form and stuff. And I think that may be like a, for some folks to understand it, like a transitional kind of thing where you are now in a place where you feel so good and part of everything, but you are still perceiving yourself as separate. And I think that's not the end game. I think the end goal is to no longer perceive us ourselves as separate, but as the great collective, the great whole. And that's not just with the human people. This is with everything. This is with the energetic tree outside my window that in the astral world I could see its aura glowing. And this is the, you know, this is the terrifying grief eater at the cemetery. This is the fairy folk. This is the, you know, the angelic. All is a part of this great collective. And yeah, it's a wonder.
And does that relate how you call yourself a guardian of the unseen world?
Yes, so I consider myself a gatekeeper, in that it's I am able to transcend, see through, and experience those who come through other places. And I see it more as a gate than a veil. A veil is you have to lift a veil to really see through a veil. You could see partly through a veil, but a veil is still. It's always closed in a way, but a gate can open. And a gate can open two ways. So things can come in and things can go out. And as a gatekeeper, I don't mean keep things at bay or keep things from going through the gate. I am more a tender of the gate, where things that want to come through, I come from my side of the gate, I can open the gate and let them through. Things from my side that want to go through there, I can open the gate and let them through to the other places. And so that's what I consider a gatekeeper. It's more welcoming. You know, a fence, a veil is something that blocks us, that needs to be there to protect us. You know, we build a wall to protect ourselves. We put a veil up to protect ourselves, to hide and protect. But a gate is something that is designed to connect us.
Oh, T, I've loved everything you've shared on the show today. Where's the best place for people to connect with you?
Well, I have a website. It's called Spooky Ms. MSTITIYI.com. You can reach me there. On there are links for my books. I have three books. I'm also a poet. So I have a book of poetry and two books in the Gatekeeper series. The third is with the publisher coming out in the fall, I believe, and I'm working on the fourth. I have a YouTube channel where I tell stories of my experiences during lockdown. I would always tell stories of everybody wants me to tell a ghost story, and because I've had so many experiences, and I don't tell like traditional ghost stories, and I don't make anything up. I just tell what's really happened, and that's enough. And so when we were locked down, my children, grown children, far away, and friends far away, and I just put it out there about, hey, what if we do, since nobody's going to work Monday mornings, how about we do Sunday night storytelling? And I'll tell ghost stories on Sunday nights. So I started that as a Facebook Live event, and I have a Spooky Ms. TI Facebook page as well. And then I saved all the videos and I put them on YouTube because there were people that wanted to hear the stories, watch the stories, and that don't do social media, don't do Facebook. So I just put all the stories on YouTube and I've got 50 some different stories of real experiences
That's a
that
lot.
I've encountered. Yeah.
I will,
Or I have.
for anyone that
Go
didn't
ahead.
get that, I will leave a link to connect with you in the show notes as well below.
Great. Great. Thank
Is
you.
there anything you'd like to share with the Passion Harvest audience that I haven't asked you today on a final note?
I think the reason that I tell these stories is I know there are so many people out there that experience the anomalous, things that are not considered normal and aren't sure what it is and aren't sure if they're actually experiencing those things. And so I tell these stories to let people know that there are others that experience these things. But my real main purpose is to let people know that this is all part of our natural world, that this is no more scary than a honeybee. that this is exactly how it's supposed to be. The spirit world, the physical world, the ethereal world, the fae, the whatever else is there, all are part of the natural world. And the natural world is a beautiful and a wonderful place that we, as the main keepers of this physical world, need to start paying attention to and stop despoiling this beautiful, beautiful space that all these other beings are part of. That it's not just for us that we take care of this earth and that we take care of our world around us and the people and the beings around us, and that each of us needs to do our part for this planet, for all of us here, all of us, the living, the never living, the non-living, all of us here, we share this place, and it's our job to keep it well.
Yay, I feel like clapping. TI Shippers, thank you for being on Passion Harvest. Thank you so
Thank you.
much.
My pleasure. Thank you so
Okay,
much.
bye-bye.
Bye.